Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up California, your source for all the right side of things, California. What I mean is the conservative outlook. I am what you call a conservative Latino, and yes, we do exist. And I am here today with my co-host, Mr. Tyler Collins. And we got a hell of a show for you all tonight. And I'm going to let Tyler Collins talk to us about that as we hit our first topic. But before that, Tyler, I understand you were enjoying Why We All Live in SoCal, planting tomatoes.
That's right. I was enjoying the sun and the good weather. So my wife and I at our house, we got a little garden out back. So I was doing some work planting out the tomatoes and growing stuff because got to cut costs with these tariffs, you know. So
tariffs, California taxes. That's what you got to cut costs with. So what do we got on tap, brother?
Well, like you said, we got a great show today. So we got a couple of main topics here. So number one is California's trade gamble. This is Newsom's attempt to exempt the state from tariffs. Second on the plate, we got voter confidence, local control, the Huntington Beach way. This is about Huntington Beach's local voter ID initiative. And then last on our big topics, we have the runoff election in San Diego District 1 with Mayor John McCann.
That one does have me I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that was it. Yeah, those are the big three.
So we try to keep some things local here. We are San Diego bound. We went from, 2009, we were a deep red county to one local county party screw up after another. And now we're literally, I don't want to say purple, we're not. We're kind of a deep blue county now. And I'm anxious to talk about this because I think McCann did better than I thought he would during the primary. You know? So it kind of gave me a little hope in that sense.
Yeah, McCann did amazing compared to what he could have done. So let's start with our first topic. So California's trade gamble. Newsom attempts to exempt his state from tariffs. So just a little bit about this. So essentially, in the face of renewed federal tariffs, California Governor Gavin Newsom has taken some controversial steps to exempt his state from federal policy. While he claims to be protecting the California economy, his approach, in my opinion, it actually challenges some constitutional boundaries, and it really reflects a broader trend of progressive leaders who are prioritizing international engagement over national unity and respecting the rule of law. So, according to an Axios News article, last Friday, Newsom said that he'll be pursuing agreements with other, quote, other countries to ensure that California is exempted from these retaliatory tariffs. So, William, I think I just want to give our audience just a little bit of a breakdown about the history of tariffs, unless they've watched your other videos, in which case I think we're beating a dead horse. But let's just give it one more time. So, Liberation Day, that was April 2nd. Everybody remembers Liberation Day.
Right.
That's where we had the huge tariffs that were put on all these countries, China, Vietnam, the Penguin Island, lots of places, and then a standard 10% tariff for everybody. So that was the first step in this kind of new vision of what Trump sees for America. In particular, towards China, there was a 34% reciprocal tariff put on them on top of the existing 20%. So you had an overall rate of 54. That was step one in tariffs. So the stock market did some things and the bond market started going south. And then the trade restrictions, essentially, and tariffs were refocused pretty much just on China at a certain point. So April 9th, we had a 90-day pause on most countries just to that 10% baseline. However, this it was except for China. And actually, towards China, the tariffs were increased to 125% total. So it really effectively cuts off trade between two of the biggest trading countries in the world, the United States and China. And I guess China didn't get Trump's message about don't retaliate, because what did China do on April 11th, William?
They retaliated.
So now China is putting its own tariffs on U.S. exports, to 125%. So now we roughly have matched tariffs each way of 125%. And this has just killed trade between the two countries.
Right,
what are your thoughts
right.
about this basic setup so far? Kind of recap for our audience maybe some things.
We're heading toward a cataclysmic economic Armageddon with $36 trillion in debt. People are they're pointing to Biden. They point to other people. Sure, you can prop up the economy when you add 300,000 jobs that are government jobs via a taxpayer money to prop the GDP up. But eventually all that did was add to the debt. You know, even more. So Trump is taking a drastic approach. Since 1988, when Oprah was good, I call her Fat Oprah, when she was her show was really good. Fat Oprah had Donald on, and Fat Oprah started asking Donald all kinds of questions. And he's been on tariffs since day one. It's like we need to tariff them, tariff this, tariff that.
Well, he's been on this position since the 1980s, and back then it was about Japan.
Well, Japan was one of the is one of the problems, and Japan. See, this is what the mainstream media is not telling you: it's China, China, China. Japan's one of the biggest culprits today. Vietnam is another big culprit today. These countries immediately came to the table. No, 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 no. I'm trying to do the best of my brother, who's half Japanese, his imitation. No tariffs. But the point being, they came to the negotiating table. Trump created this formula, and Trump's getting knocked. Okay, let's take a step back, is what I'm trying to say. So Trump had Liberation Day. He immediately got pushback from the establishment side of the Republican wing. He got pushback from every Democrat just because it was Trump. And he got pushback from all the mainstream media, and obviously the TDSers were like, ooh, you know, with their pushback. And so everything was negative, negative, negative. So they were actually attacking him from everything from the formula. Did you hear? Did you see the news where they attacked his formula for how he came up with these tariff numbers? Well,
yes. Yeah.
They were wrong. What happened was Trump kept saying reciprocal tariffs when he should have been saying proportional tariffs. The formula is geared towards creating proportionality. It's worked out by taking the U.S. trade gap with the country, then you divide it by what we buy from them, and then cutting that in half, and or setting it at 10%. Most people aren't going to understand what I just said there. It's hard for me to understand, and I've written that down and reread it 10 million times. The point being, none of that matters at the end. The whole point was to create these tariffs to get these companies to the negotiating table. So the naysayers.
Another way of stating it for the audience is that the tariff rate that Trump applied on these other countries was proportional to our trade deficit with them.
Correct.
So high deficit countries like Vietnam got an extremely high tariff rate.
Exactly. And the whole point, they could have thrown 100% on everybody. The whole point was come to the negotiating table. Now, I'm going to address another point. Penguin Island, I forget what the name of it is, or these others, the ones with only sheep. So what these TDSers, these morons, I'm going to call them morons. What these, and they're morons because they know. Being a moron means you know, but you're still sane. So why would we sit there and put it on Penguin Island or Goat Island? You do it because what happens is China will sit there and fly their plane into one of these countries. They'll get a stamp. All of a sudden, it's made from Penguin Island. So they avoid the tariffs. What's my proof? China's already done this in Malaysia. About 13 companies sent all their goods to Malaysia, got them stamped, made in Malaysia, when they were really made in China, to avoid the massive tariffs. So that's why Trump did that across the board. So you see what I'm trying to say, the TDSers? Yeah, that includes some
I thought that was funny. It's on the surface, it seems ridiculous, right, that you're putting tariffs on Penguin Island. But once you dig into it, just like right below the surface, oh, of course, it makes sense. They're trying to prevent the Chinese from cheating because they don't want them to do like what you said, ship their cargo over, say hi to the penguins, get a stamp, and then ship it to the United States.
Exactly. So. And here's what people don't know. 88% of the stock market is owned by 88% of the stock market is owned by the elites, you know, small 10%. 50% of the working class, we have like less than 4% involved in the stock market. So the stock market, with the continual printing of money, the continual propping up of it had made the billionaires bigger billionaires. You know, the people have not had their fair share, for lack of a better word. Do you know who Scott Bessent is?
Yep.
What's his claim to fame? Do you know?
Scott Bessent's claim to fame, well, he's got a couple of things. What was in your mind is the biggest one.
He, if you're a conservative, grab on to something. Hold on tight. Do not be holding your pet because you're going to accidentally choke him. Scott Bessent is a disciple or worked with George Soros. Scott Bessent was one of the architects of Black Wednesday. Scott Bessent noticed the English pound, the UK, the English pound, wow, that has a high value. It's pretty strong right now. Then he discovered, oh, it's strong because the UK is buying the English pound with foreign currency. Once he figured that out, he short sold on it and made $1 billion for George Soros. And he didn't crater, but the English pound took a big hit. And my point in bringing that up, he's the architect for the current tariff. So all the critics are saying is chaos, they don't know what they're doing. Actually, they know exactly what they're doing. Tyler, what I told my partner and other people is sometimes in life when you plan things out in business, you know the answer or you know the action you're going to do, you just don't know when. You've got to let the market forces dictate that. I was never fearful of the stock market's volatility when it dropped 2,200 points. Why? Because I learned as a child when Ronald Reagan says something about the markets and the markets went up. I'm like, oh, wow, when the president says something, it fluctuates the market. Now, as a kid, I'm like, woo, he needs to be saying things a lot, you know, not understanding. You can't do it all the time. Clinton has done this. Bush has done this. Obama has done this. So they knew when the market dropped, I knew he would likely come out with, we've got this many countries doing a deal. And sure enough, Scott Bessent likely said, Mr. President, now is the time. We are freezing the tariffs for every company that has is coming to the table to renegotiate. We are keeping it on the countries that have pushing back and have put the retaliatory tariffs up, ergo China. So Trump has a 90-day what's the word here, Tyler? Has a 90-day
pause. That's the buzzword, yes. Pause.
The 90-day pause for the tariffs as these companies negotiate. Now, Tyler, for the audience out there, it's not just the tariffs. The UK, Japan especially, and China especially, they'll have lower tariff rates. So China, on paper, at times it's 6 or 7% tariffs. What they do is a regulatory. All that red tape, all the obstacles made it to the point where companies go, I just can't bring my stuff in because of all these other non-tariff obstacles.
And the other big one with China is that if you want to open up shop in China, you need to let the Communist Party essentially have your intellectual property.
That's correct. You have to have 51%
technology transfer. This is how China got to where they are, is because any U.S. company that operated there had to give China access to their technology.
Correct. They have stolen about $800 billion of IP. So, for example, we have a software product. We open it up to China. Next thing you know, China has their version of that software, and you will find American code. You know, so when people say, no, China's markets are open, let me give you Facebook as an example. Facebook is literally in every country in the world through negotiations. Not in China. China has their own version of Facebook. See, so China, I want to say we export in like a couple hundred billion to China every year. They export out to us like 600 billion, 400, 600 billion. I don't have my notes in front of me with that. But you see the disparity. So in a trade war, who's going to win? We are, did you know, Tyler, we are a $17 trillion economy to the outside world, meaning we're worth $17 trillion in terms of our buying power to the world. They need us more than we need them. That's why they immediately came to begin negotiations. Now, some critics are saying, and I apologize, Tyler, I know you're a former libertarian. The libertarians are like, smooth Holly, smooth Holly, smooth Holly. Smooth Holly came out after the collapse of the stock market. It did not help. It created retaliatory tariffs that Herbert Hoover wasn't prepared for. But we had the leverage. We are the buying power. We weren't at the time. Back then, we weren't we weren't like, let's sell all our stuff to the U.S. That has come about since then. Now, again, $17 trillion. We are the world's, it's kind of like we are the flea market that everybody wants to set up shop at. Yeah, so it's a completely different scenario. Again, as I showed you with the formula, people are trying to denigrate Trump. But the truth of the matter is, Trump is taking a massive risk. Now, get me wrong, people. This can backfire if the tariffs hold out too long. But here's the final point I'll make on the tariffs here is even with the hit, in 2018 we had tariffs. Early on, the public took a 0.7% hit in terms of what we cost. So after it was said and done on some of the products to China, we took a 6% hit. I'm saying, say it was 10%, 10% tariff. Early on, it was a less than a 1% hit. After the tariff stayed in place at 10% on China, we took a 6% hit. So something that cost $10 increased the tariff was a $6 hit on us after a few years. Early on, it was less than a dollar hit. Now, that said, when y'all think these tariffs, once again, the mainstream media is lying. They're conflating the tariffs with inflation. Inflation can be year over year. It keeps going up, up, and up. The tariffs are a one-time hit. Everything equal. That product, if it costs $100 on day one before the tariffs, and say a 10% tariff, it's going to cost $110 the next year. But the following year, it's going to cost $110. Now, here's the kicker with the bigger plan, people. Trump is going to have the tax cuts. The tariffs are going to allow us to be able to easily create tax cuts. So, if you're
I was going to say, that's the other thing people are ignoring, is that that money, the increase in the prices, is not just going into the void. That's going into the government's coffers, which can allow them to cut other revenue sources, such as certain parts of the income tax code.
Yeah, and I hate it when people call taxes revenue. Taxes aren't revenue, they're tax.
We have another discussion about this. I've had too many meetings now with city managers, and I start calling things revenue.
Yeah, I always correct them. It's not revenue, it's taxes. Yeah. So if anybody earning $150,000, they want to go to no taxes. I don't know if that'll happen. But let's say theoretically you get a 30% tax cut. All of a sudden that 10% tariff increase, you're still coming out ahead. This is also what makes Doge so important in getting that waste out of there, reducing the debt. So eventually we'll be able to have lower taxes, and the tariffs will generate revenue enough to start getting that debt down. And here's the final point is, I just lost my train of thought, my notes. I'll remember it. There's a final point I wanted to make on these.
We'll circle back, you know.
Yeah, but you have inflation, you have the taxes, and you have Scott Bessent. For anybody out there, look up Scott Bessent. The man is a genius. The reason I bring Scott Bessent up, Tyler, is he moved the markets. We're talking about moving markets here. What Trump is doing is reshaping the way, our way of life. And that hasn't been done since Reagan. Oh, and one final point, there is no energy being tariffed. Is the media talking about that? No, they're not. There aren't tariffs. Energy has been excluded from that. So you're not, because what people don't know is energy is critical to the moving of goods, i.e. gas, petrol, railways, freights, whatever. And if that has not moved, your egg prices, your grocery prices, energy drives that price up when energy costs more. But tariffs aren't on energy, so that helps out tremendously as well. Any questions, brother?
No questions. Just another quick update for our audience. So as of now, Trump has exempted certain electronics from the tariffs on China. I believe this includes things like cell phones, solar panels, and other electronic goods. So those are actually now exempted from the tariffs on China.
You know, I read that. I didn't confirm it. I was doing some other stuff. So they did do that then. Because I had read that. I don't know why he would do that when we can get so much from Taiwan. But we'll find out. You know, maybe he's trying.
Maybe
to,
he got pressured by Tim Apple or something. You know,
I don't think so. I think if anything, that's Scott Bessent. Scott Bessent is driving this, and Howard Litwick is helping push it as well, and the Commerce Secretary, that is. So
we've gone on a bit of a tangent, but I think this was helpful for the audience if you hadn't watched any other Fired Up episodes. A little bit about the tariffs, what they are, why they were there, and the current situation. So getting back to Gavin Newsom. So the key question is, what is Newsom trying to accomplish? So remember, he said last Friday that he is pursuing agreements with other countries to ensure California is exempted from retaliatory tariffs. So as of right now, he's not trying to exempt the Trump tariffs for California. He's trying to say to these other countries, don't tariff us in response because we're California, we're not Trump, we're these progressives, and we don't agree with Trump's policies. Essentially, play nice with us, and when the Democrats get in 28 or whatever, then we'll deal nicely with you. That's kind of my understanding. So a little bit more information about specifically what Newsom said, and then we'll go into whether or not Newsom can expand this and try and fight back directly against the Trump tariffs. So in a video message on Friday, he said he directed his administration to look at new opportunities to expand trade and to remind our trading partners around the globe that California remains a stable trading partner. So the Golden State, California, it's really reliant on outside partners, in particular Mexico, Canada, and China. Obviously, we share the southern border right here in San Diego with Mexico. You drive on the 5 freeway, you see a huge amount of trucks with Tijuana license plates.
Correct.
If you go down over the right hill, you can see the port of Long Beach. If you're up in Orange County or Los Angeles County, and you can see there's just tankers and container ships all waiting outside to dock at the port. And so those goods from the east coast of China are coming across the Pacific to Long Beach, most of them, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be exported then to other states, like or internally in California, or then Nevada across railways, Arizona and such. And the port itself is a huge revenue source for Los Angeles area. The port of Long Beach is a huge thing, the jobs and everything that goes along with that. Essentially, what Newsom is saying is that California is a very trade-dependent state, and retaliatory tariffs by other countries on the U.S. would stand to have an outsized impact on California businesses, farmers, ranchers, and this is all according to Newsom's press release. But let's cover a little bit about Trump's side. So what did Trump say in response? So in response, White House spokesperson Kush Desai, I hope I'm saying that right, He basically said, quote, Gavin Newsom should focus on out-of-control homelessness, crime, regulations, and unaffordability in California instead of trying his hand at international deal-making, end quote. So in other words, what do they say? They're saying, you got enough problems there in California. How about you fix your own house before talking about what we as a nation should be doing? What do you think? I think he's got a point there. There's already so many problems in California. Why? And now he's going to try and pursue these other agreements. Maybe he should focus on some more important things to average Californians. What do you think about that, William?
Well, California's already baked in. California is what it is to Newsom. He's not going to change anything. So he's creating revisionist history, as we've seen with this podcast, by going, Latinx, we never said that. Or, yeah, transgender girls, that's not fair. Because he can't change anything. The reason Newsom is talking big on tariffs, and by the way, he can't make deals about tariffs. The Constitution prevents that. He can't make any tariffs or trade deals with other countries. And if he tried to, the courts would immediately stop him. What he's just doing is going on a talk. What do they call it? Speaking talk. He's going around talking a good game, you know, because he wants to run for president. So it doesn't matter what the White House says. Technically, they may be right, but I mean, who cares what the White House says, because we know Newsom is not going to do anything. The White House is 100% true, correct. Newsom, we're still looking for the tiny homes. You know, where's the old tiny homes, Newsom? The feds have come out and said, show me the money when it comes to the homeless money. And all of a sudden, Democrats in L.A., because they don't know. Newsom's with them. We're still looking for the $5 billion in masks that he bought from China. Where did the $5 billion go? Because we never got the masks. Newsom, what I'm trying to say is California is already in the rearview mirror for Newsom. He's checked out. You never served, but in the military, I forget the term. I got out of the military in 1993, but there comes a point where you just don't care anymore because you're counting the days to get out. I'm like 100 days before I get out of this crap. There are 190 days, and that's all you care about. That's Newsom. He's just counting the days to when the next presidential cycle begins. And that's what this is all about. Do you really think, Tyler, he cares about any of those issues? Because if he did, he would already have been trying to take care of them. All he did, and here's the final take for me on what the White House said. It's true what they say. They're correct. But the problem with these billions Newsom has given out, it's part of the government, the Democrat game plan, and how they take care of their activists, the people who have worked for them. That's why nothing actually ever works. The money's, a lot of it's a grift to take care of your activists, your nonprofit groups, to keep the Democrat message out there, to keep the lie going. Because I'm going to be honest with you, if you're a leftist listening to this, show me the success. Where out of all these billions with the homeless, all these billions for the water structures, all this money, your wind farms, it's like Trump said, you know, honey, I want to watch TV tonight. Well, how's the wind farm going tonight? You know, your green energy hasn't worked. So California's behind him. He's revising his lies to figure out how he can say them and make them at least become believable. And he's doing this tariff negotiation, this non-negotiation, just to look presidential.
Now, I agree with you. He doesn't really have the power to do this. Whether or not he's going to try to do anything, he might have already tried to do it. Now, there is an interesting question, because I've heard, actually, some of the retaliatory tariffs by other countries have been targeted on exports from red states, perhaps agricultural products and other things made, you know, in the grain belt. Now, here's an interesting question. What does it mean if other countries exempt California from their retaliatory tariffs? Does that kind of accelerate that dynamic of retaliation by other countries being focused on the red states and ignoring the blue states, almost as some kind of political pressuring on Trump because they're trying to target his base?
You know, it can't, because you still have the overall picture. Trump could just jack up the tariffs even more, you know, and what you're referring to is, let me look it up here. I got it in my notes here, but you're referring to the UK. The UK was targeting red states. But here's the problem. You know, Germany's auto sales, are they only going to blue states?
No.
No. See, that's the problem. You can target certain items for certain states, maybe, but yet we are a nation. You know, so they're looking at the bigger picture. So the EU, Bessent is where this came from. He views the EU swing state gambit. They're targeting red state. It's a misfire because the U.S. exports to the EU $350 billion in goods like tech, aircraft, soybeans. But that's dwarfed because the EU exports nearly $600 billion. Not to red states, but to these United States of America. So if they start to play this target game, well, the Finnish Scott Bessent's belief, his example is the German auto workers. In 2018, they caved because they have hundreds of billions that come to the U.S. in and of itself. So the bigger picture is going to cause these little games they're trying to play by targeting a red state to fail. You know, and again, Trump can just jack up the tariffs. Why? They don't. We have too many regs. The UK actually has regs similar to China. You don't see Ford over there. You don't see Chevy over there. You see Mercedes, BMW, because they've locked us out. You know, so they need our markets more than we need their markets. In fact, Germany's already looking at potentially thousands of layoffs from the auto industry because of these tariffs. So
yeah, Germany's hurting between the events from the Russia-Ukraine war, the cutoff of Nord Stream. Essentially, Germany's entire economy was dependent on energy and other things from the Eastern Bloc, Russia and Ukraine is actually where a lot of their suppliers for certain auto manufacturers, Porsche, Mercedes, they would have seats and seat belts made in these cheaper labor countries. So, and the tariffs are just adding fire to this. Germany's economy is in free fall, essentially. Their economic base is kaput, to put it one way.
I remember my point, because you're right. They get all that. I don't know what he said triggered it. So, remember, Trump, like, has a 10% tariff across the board. How dare he? Nobody's going to pay those 10%. So what's happened now? That 10% tariff. We love that 10% tariff. Just get the 90% off our backs. So he has made it a permanent tariff just because they're content. Oh, only 10%. We got it. We got off lucky on that one. Yeah. So that's what I meant to say. This is no different. They're looking at this massive tariffs and the nearly $600 billion that we Americans buy from Europe as a non-starter. You know, are you going to pay $80,000? Are you going to pay $200,000 for that Porsche? Or all of a sudden, does that American-made sports car or even a Japanese-made sports car look much more attractive, regardless of the what's that, the commercial, German precision or whatever? Yeah,
German engineering.
Yeah, that's it. German engineering. Well, that engineering ain't worth an extra $40,000, bro. So that's what they risk more. So all of a sudden, that it isn't worth $40,000 more. But it may be worth a few thousand more in terms of the 10% being in place. So that's an important point. That 10% can raise us hundreds of billions over the years to bring that debt down, and that's across the board now. And it's reciprocal, meaning you're tariffing us too. We're tariffing you at 10% too. And we still have the bigger market. You're still going to be able to sell your products because our tax cuts are going to allow the Americans to be able to afford your products today. So I apologize about that, but I knew there was something important. It was this Trump made an impossibility become the impossible in terms of how the media, the Democrats, the TDSers were portraying that 10%. I apologize, Tyler. But getting back to Newsom real quick, he's just posturing is where I will leave that at.
Well, that sounds like Newsom.
Yeah, as are these countries that said we're going to target red states. Yeah.
Well, let's move on to the next topic here. So our topic, numero dos, is voter confidence, local control, the Huntington Beach way. So I think you'll agree with me, William, that we live in a time of a lot of concern about election integrity. And so in light of this, the city of Huntington Beach made headlines in 2024 when their residents approved Measure A. So this was a local ballot initiative that authorized voter ID requirements for local elections. So this is a first in the state of California. And so, of course, California didn't like this because they don't want anyone to have to show their ID. When Huntington Beach did this, the state wanted to make an example out of them. Mm-hmm. So this measure, it was, people like to say, oh, you want ballot ID, so ID to show at the polling places because you want to stop people from voting. Well, tied together with this, they actually expanded in-person voting sites and permitted oversight of ballot drop boxes. So how are you going to say they're trying to stop people from voting when they're simultaneously expanding voting sites and access? So this was essentially, this happened because of what I'm saying, this climate of uncertainty over election integrity, and that's why the residents approved this in 2024. And after that was approved, there was immediate backlash from California. So Newsom sicked his bulldog, Rob Bonta, on it, and they launched a lawsuit immediately against the city. And so what's been happening since then has been this legal debacle between the state and Huntington Beach, essentially over kind of fighting over this issue here about the democratically approved voter ID initiative. So just for our readers and our listeners, a little bit of background on California voter ID. So when you go, if you are registered in California's system, you do not need to show an ID when you go to vote. If you went to vote, you can go to a polling place. You simply state who you are. You sign something. They can give you a provisional ballot. You do not need to show ID. Now, a lot of people would say that this is not secure. You can just say you're anyone. Oh, I'm so-and-so, and I can sign for them. They don't check a picture. They just check that you're in a database and you haven't already voted, and that's it. So I think that's pretty problematic. What are your thoughts, you know, to kind of provide the readers with information on the current voting process in California?
Well, I think this boils down to Huntington Beach said you got to show ID. The state said no, it's illegal. It was taken to court. The judge said, you know, it's too early to rule on this because y'all haven't even tried implementing it, so we don't see how bad it is. The higher court, the state appealed this. Higher court said, no, senor, you must rule on it. That's my best Bob Bonta impression when he's in town and not missing meetings, you know. And so the judge kind of ruled on it on April 3rd because they said, hey, when they appealed, says, no, you got to rule on it. So the court hearing took place in Orange County, and the judge's name was Judge Nico Durbetas. I apologize.
Yeah, Nico Durbetas.
Durbetas, yeah. And if I'm correct here, obviously it's part of this whole bigger picture. But during the hearing, the lawyers for Huntington Beach, they said that their status as a charter city, and this is the gobbledygook. Off camera, Tyler and I were talking about, well, you have federal, state, and local voting rules, so it becomes convoluted. But what Huntington Beach was arguing, Tyler, was that it's a charter city. Allows them to set their own rules. I think you mentioned that when you were giving us the overview. Well, that was brought up as a specific issue in terms of the voter ID. And then they asked the judge to consider a recent executive order by President Donald Trump. And as we all know, he had that executive order about voter integrity. You know, election integrity. I apologize. Election integrity. And they claim it supports their voter ID rule. And Rabonta, I guess he showed up for this. And Secretary of State Shirley Weber, you know, when I think of Shirley Weber, I think of Good Times and this big, hefty woman who was on Good Times. No, What's Happening. There was a great What's Happening. They call her Shirley. You weren't even born then, Tyler, so you had no clue what I'm talking about. It was a popular show. But anyway, they argued that that Measure A violates California law. And that bans local governments. So no final ruling was actually made, to my knowledge. And that's where I got confused, but I thought it did. And that's where I need you to educate me a little bit on. Because has there been a ruling? Because I thought April 7th something came out with Judge Robeda denying the state's request to block the measure. I don't know if it's under appeal or not, and I assume it would be under appeal. And I apologize. So April 3rd, there was no ruling made, but I think April 7th, he denied the state's request to block Measure A. But I don't really understand why. I just know it's under appeal. And I guess for the audience, they just have to know that everything's coming to a head is kind of how I view it. I guess what I'm trying to say, as a voter, I'm like, I'm happy. You know, because this wasn't a one and done by an activist judge. So that's what I got out of it. Hey, this case is going to go. I think this case, because of Trump's executive action there, his executive order, could wind up in the federal courts as well. But I'm not sure on that because this is a local issue with the states dealing. But because of the executive order being thrown in, it could open the doors up to it being allowed to go up much higher. I don't know, though.
So like you said, we got a lot of things going on. We have California election law at the state level and what Rob Bonta is trying to say. We have a federal executive order. Huntington Beach, what they're doing is technically in compliance with the federal executive order. And then it all comes down to this judge, Orange County Superior Court Judge Nico Durbetas. And so Durbetas has actually ruled against the state. He's gone against Rob Bonta in the past. So this is the second time that essentially Durbetas has ruled against the state. Right. And like you said, there was something that happened on April 7th. So according to the Orange County Registrar, on April 7th, the judge ruled decisively in favor of Huntington Beach. And he said, quote, "There is no showing that a voter identification requirement compromises the integrity of a municipal election." I'm going to say this again. This is a municipal election. So for our audience here, Huntington Beach's rules are going to only apply to municipal elections. So then there's going to be state and federal. Huntington Beach's ID laws will not be applied to the other two as of right now.
Okay, so in essence, what the judge is saying that the voter ID laws don't violate voting rights.
Exactly, which was Rob Bonta's whole argument, is that this is violating voting rights and going against California discrimination laws. The judge said that's obviously not the case. If you can produce an ID to vote, how is that impeding you from voting?
But here's the kicker. I'm sorry, go ahead. I just got excited.
No, go ahead.
It's 2026. So when are municipal elections going to take place? At the same time as what? Federal elections.
That's right. Yep.
So it may say for municipal elections, but got to show your ID. Whether it doesn't matter where you're voting. So for special elections or off-year elections, you know, it would apply in a different way. But on the federal, So this is a brutal loss for Rob Bonta, the man, the myth, the he's never there politician. And for you people who don't know, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, I think, Tyler, where he's missed like over 50% of meetings he was supposed to be at as what is he?
He's missing almost as many things as Tara Lawson Remmer. If people get that joke, but.
Yeah, so I actually see great hope. I see a title shift. I don't remember the stat was like 70% or 80% of people agree. Hey, voter ID. And here's my kicker as a Latino. Obviously,
that's not just Republicans. That's overall 70-80% of people agree that people should show voter ID to vote.
And as a Latino, I find it offensive that they think minorities are too stupid to know how to get voter ID. Why? When I go buy my plane ticket, got to show my ID. You know, when I go buy my beer, I don't really drink, but when I have friends coming over, go buy liquor across the street, got to show, I don't have to show my ID, they know me. But you get my point. Yeah. Hell, cigarettes, got to show your ID. I want to go to the club, got to show your ID. You know, so I think Latinos, there's a great video about Army, I forget what his name is. But he's in, I think I've told you about this, Tyler. I think I've showed it to you, where he's in Brooklyn, or he's asking all these people.
I've seen this interview, yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah, and it shows, what's it called, the softer
side? He interviews the Columbia University, like,
the kids,
people.
The students.
And then he goes to, like, Harlem or something, like 100th Street.
Yes!
And, like, it's just so different, their responses about this. It's amazing.
Well, the white people's response was racist. It's a soft, what's it called? The soft bigotry? There's a term for it.
Bigotry. Bigotry of low expectations.
Yeah. You don't realize you're being very, very racist. So they're like, one of the answers, you know, they may not have internet or, you know, they may not know where the DMV's at. Oh, yeah, it's very racist. And one guy in Harlem, are we on candid camera or something? He couldn't believe the questions being asked. And a lot of guys, yeah, DMV's right down there, gives direction, boom, boom, boom. And she goes, really? I got internet on my phone. I mean, they are using black Americans and now Latinos. Latinos have become their fallback, you know, demographic. And they're shocked because they didn't realize Latinos aren't monolithic. We all think differently, etc. And that's because we weren't brought in as slaves, and we know our history, we know our specific culture, whether El Salvadoran, Guatemalan, Puerto Rican. That is one aspect. That's my personal belief. So we have history, we have our beliefs, we have how we look at the world, and they can't dictate to us, but they look at us as a fallback. I don't know, Tyler, let's get on the record so people don't tie you to me. You don't think we minorities don't know where the DMV is, do you?
No, I think everyone is perfectly capable of getting an ID. So,
I agree. But what do you think, Tyler, though, real quick? I assume this is phenomenal news, don't you?
Oh, this is incredible news. I mean, there's been a lot of defeats for Bonta and victories for conservatives. The voter ID initiative in Huntington Beach, this is one. And then general firearms-related cases. Actually, a lot of them filed by San Diego County gun owners. We've had a lot of victories there as well. That's been great.
We just lost that big one with the shadow gun.
Yeah,
or
the ghost gun one, yes.
Yeah, the ghost gun.
But the May versus Shall, that was a huge victory. So essentially you had concealed carry was approved nationally because of that, and so obviously that applied to California. So any final thoughts there, William, before we move on to the next topic?
I think this may go down to defeat. This is state court, so I don't know how it would go into federal courts. But I think because of the executive order, there's some sharp lawyer that can redo this case and file it under the federal court.
I don't think the Democrats would want this to go to federal courts, though. Because if it goes to the federal courts and the conservatives win, then you know what that means.
Because, yeah. See, I don't know. Guys, I'm not a lawyer. I haven't stayed at a Holiday Inn in a while, so I'm coming from a point of view that I don't know. But I can imagine they can tie this law to Trump's executive order and file it in a federal court because of that. That gives it federal gravitas. But I'm purely speculating. Again, have not stayed at a Holiday Inn, so I don't know.
Well, let's continue on. So next topic, we got the runoff election in San Diego District 1. So unless you've been living under a rock, you should know that there was a special election in Board of Supervisors District 1 in San Diego County. And this was after Nora Vargas suddenly disappeared. She decided, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. And so they had a special election to elect the next Board of Supervisors person for District 1. And so we had a couple of candidates. The top two in this essentially special election were Chula Vista Mayor John McCann. And John McCann got 43.6% of the vote. And second was Imperial Beach Mayor Paloma. I'm not sure how you say this. Aguirre?
Aguirre.
Yeah, that's how you say it. And so she got 31.6% of the vote. So, I mean, John McCann, the Republican candidate in this nonpartisan election, he had an amazing showing. Actually, 43.6. That was really good. So if we can keep doing the work and keep putting in the time, we're going to give Paloma Aguirre a really good run for her money in this runoff election.
I agree. They've got to get the registered voters out there. So, for example, San Ysidro, there's about 1,600 registered voters. About 130 came out. Now, the reason I say that is that's rural. Rural tends to be more red, but I don't know because this is heavily Chicano, as my Mexican friend always corrects me. He goes, "We went to school together, it's Chicano, man." But so, and they tend to vote Democrat, but we made great headway with the Latino crowd. So I'm rooting for McCann. In fact, I'm going to reach out to his campaign this week, Tyler. Maybe you know somebody to see if we can get him or a representative on Fired Up California to talk about this race. I was jazzed. In fact, to the audience, when we were looking for stories, Tyler's usually the one who's like, hey, what about locals? And I don't push away from that. I'm like, well, let's see first what's happening around California. Then I saw that story. I'm like, that's big. Because that is it doesn't represent California in the bigger picture, but in a way it does. If we can create and win that upset, we can show California and inspire other Republicans, hey, we did it down here. It can be done. And we have Roxanne Hogue, who is now the chairwoman for the Los Angeles Republican Party. That's important, Californians, because she's a conservative. Started out as activist. She, at times, her and I have had a few issues with how we look at the power, the leaders of the party. But in her defense, she's got to live and work in that world where I'm an activist. You know, damn you, Jessica Bilal-Patcher. Now, if I was actually working at the party, how you doing, Jesse girl? That's how that works. But you get my point. And my point in saying her name is she's a conservative activist, and she's looking to actually rally the people. We also have Corinne Rankin as our state chair, and she's in Trump's bed since day one. That's probably the worst choice of words I could have said, huh? She's in the Trump's camp since day one. In 2015, she's black. She's a strong woman. And the reason I bring up black, she's not supposed to do that. She could have just thrown him under the bus when every other California Republican leader, including Jessica Milan Patterson, did. She just stuck by him publicly as well as privately. Whereas privately, Jessica Milan Patterson was using Trump's name to raise funds, but publicly wouldn't say a word about him unless forced to. So that's what this election gives me hope. McCann's election could become a ripple effect internally in revitalizing the party. That's how I see it. Now, can he win? I kind of think he can. Was there any third party in there? that voted, that took the vote?
There was. So let's look. The last candidate. So this is the end of San Diego City Councilwoman Vivian Moreno. She is not moving up in the ranks.
Well, it's not that. It's not. What percentage? Okay, so 13%. So what percentage did Aguirre get?
So Aguirre got 31.6.
Oh, wow. Wow, wow. 31.6 she got. So that's 32 plus 17 is what? So this is a close race.
Up. Yes. Yeah, it is. Yeah. So this then there were other candidates that got the remainder. But
which was what?
Those are the big three. Were McCann, number one, with 43.6. Aguirre, second, 31.6. And Vivian Moreno, and she got 13%.
And what was the rest just combined? Did they have
the rest were just other candidates.
No. I don't care about the candidates, but what percentage of the makeup was that?
It's the remainder is about 12%, give or take.
Well, see, that's huge because odds are those are probably a lot of Democrats. So McCann still has an uphill battle. Let's not sugarcoat it. But there's hope. He's also a Chula Vista guy. He's a South Bay guy, or South, whatever they call that area now, South Bay. I think South Bay's more in the L.A. area, they call that. But he's South San Diego guy.
Yeah.
I think he has a shot if Paula Witzel and Carl DeMaio rally behind him. And that's the problem. I know Carl DeMaio is not a fan of McCann. Yeah. I mean, I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But he can win in a united front. We'll see what happens.
Yep. Let's hope we do that. And just to reiterate for our audience why this election is so important, and if you live in District 1, which is the southern part of San Diego, you need to get out there and start volunteering and doing whatever you can, even a yard sign. Because whoever wins the seat determines which party controls the county. This would flip if the Democrats win, the progressives retain control. If the Republicans win, this is an upset and gives conservatives the power back, gives them the board majority. So that's go ahead.
The key here is when it was Republican controlled, we didn't have any worry with money. The funds were being distributed properly, and we had a surplus. Without it, we're in debt now. And that means projects get cut. That means we're in debt because there's a lot of groups we're giving money out to that are nothing but activists. We're going to pay them back, Democrat groups. And because they control the Board of Supervisors, they're able to do that. And one of them is like the $5 million they're paying for a fund for illegal aliens. You know, there's people who run that group. They're Democrats. So this is their payback. This is how our money gets grifted. And once we were fiscally in the black, now we're fisking the red. What's the term they give, Tyler, when you're looking at the next cycle and you're in the red already? And we talked about this 2-3 episodes. See, I'm more of a Trumpian figure in the sense of like, yeah, I talk in generalities. But there's a term for that. As we head into this cycle, we're in the red. By like, what was it?
We're already in the red. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you vote McCann.
Vote McCann.
We'll have him on.
So just that was basically the summary of that. That's what's happening. We're moving on. So the votes have pretty much all been counted at this point. There's no way that the tally is going to shift by that much. The question now is just whether the party can get its act together and rally around McCann, and we hope they do. So that was kind of it for the third topic. Let's move on to the Cali Blitz. It's all yours, William.
The Cali Blitz, baby. We're on fire. We're surging. It's a torch. I guess I'm a hypocrite. William, L.A. just burned down. Why are you saying all that? I want one more thing to burn down and flame out. Karen Bass. And we're going to talk about her in the Cali Blitz. So Cali Blitz number one, California sues the Trump administration over abrupt cut to school COVID relief funds. So California joined 12 other states, Tyler, and they're launching a federal lawsuit, and they're accusing Trump, well, his administration, of illegally terminating pandemic relief grants for K-12 schools, costing them hundreds of millions in essence. They're saying it's unauthorized. They're saying what Linda McMahon did. She did this in late March, abruptly ending the extensions for COVID relief grants. Now, these extensions were extensions that were given under Biden, meaning so I don't know how this is going to play out, but I'm like, you know what? If the state can't cover the cost of education, the federal government should fill in gaps But you've got to look at which programs are being filled in. And that's where I think they could come to the middle to keep some of these funds going while removing others. I'm trying to look at it in a fair way for the kids. But at the end of the day, I have no faith in the California public system. And I would keep all the money pulled until they got rid of these programs that are DEI related also.
I was going to say, just get rid of the DEI programs and then you can get your funds back. But I'm not sure they're going to do that.
Exactly, exactly. So part of the problem here, Tyler, before we move on, though, there's post-pandemic challenges, they say, like 12% drop in reading proficiency. You know, now my take is, really? Maybe you look in the mirror to understand why that 12% drop. You don't need federal funds for that proficiency to drop. You just stop doing your jobs during the COVID era. And money is not going to help the proficiency. Better teachers who don't care about you. What's that, little Johnny? No, you're not a boy. You're a little girl. Come here, little Johnny. Let's talk. Versus little Johnny. Read me that sentence. And I sound sarcastic, but in essence, that's what it boils down to, I think, with a lot of this stuff. It's not money. It's the quality of teaching. Any final words before we move on?
Well, in talking about COVID, the teachers did everything within their power to not go back to the classroom. They just wanted to sit at home, do their little Zoom things, and that party ended eventually for them, but not without kicking and screaming.
Yeah. Now, Bonta does have good ground to stand on. He's citing a 2020 Supreme Court ruling against arbitrary federal cuts.
And I was going to say, there is a lot of legal precedent for this, so they do have standing.
Well, they can just make life miserable for them, having forced them to fight for every step, you know, until they get the DEI. And eventually somebody will go, just get the DEI out of here, and they'll be happy. All right, California sues Trump over library grant termination. Here's another lawsuit. It kind of falls. It's a different law. He can't use the 2020. But they pulled a $5 million grant from California's 1,100 libraries. They claim the state's refusal. This is not DEI, but it's the banning of books. Meaning, people, there are books out there to show 5-6-year-olds how to drop to their knees and do a Monica. But, I mean, that they shouldn't be there, and they're refusing to pull those out. So they said, we're stopping your funding. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, those books should not be in the libraries. And, I don't blame Trump at all for taking away those funds. Take those books out of the libraries.
You know, the kicker in all this, Tyler, is when people have gone to school board meetings and they start reading, they're ordered to stop because that's too graphic. But yet you're okay with a 5-year-old? What about your kid? Oh, my kid goes to private school.
That is the most hypocritical thing when the teachers or whoever, the administrators, they send their kids to another school.
Exactly.
Because they don't want them in this, you know, environment where they're not properly being taught or they're being exposed to pornographic information.
That's right. That's right. They only want Joe Biden himself to do that to them. That's Ashley Biden's words, not mine. He took showers with me. It's in my diary. Anyway, county business number 3, California defies Trump's order to end school DEI programs. This goes to your first take. California has openly rejected Trump administration's directive to certify that its 1,000 school districts have eliminated DEI programs. They're risking billions in federal education funding. See, they don't have a strong leg to stand on this one, I don't think. You brought this up already, the orders demands for certification within 10 days. Districts say they're confused with vague references, illegal DEI practices without defining them, leaving LA unified. So these school boards, they say we're waiting the state's guidance. And Newsom says, hey, we're going to fight this. So all they're doing is creating greater chaos. Look, people, I'm sorry. I'm Latino. If that Latino teacher can't tells you 1 + 1 = 3, or that your girl is a boy or a boy is a girl, vice versa, I don't want him teaching. And if the only person to replace him is white, that's fine. If it's black, that's fine. I just don't want those initiatives being put ahead of qualified individuals. I don't care if the person is white, black, Asian, or whatnot. If they're qualified, put them in the job. I don't want them if they're not qualified, whether they're black, white, Asian, or whatever. And that's what this boils down to. And more importantly, this boils down to the quality of our kids' education. They're putting DEI crap ahead of teaching the kids proficiency.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you listen to a lot of these proponents of DEI, and on the surface, yeah, okay, it sounds great. Diversity, equity, inclusion. But the problem is those words, when used by the left, don't mean what you think they mean. If it was just about treating everyone equally, then that'd be fine. But it's not. It's about equity. And equity refers to equality of outcome. It's not equality of the starting point. It's not saying, okay, everyone has an equal chance to start. It's saying, no, the result must be equal. And they're saying, essentially, that there are certain systems in place. They kind of wave their hands at what that is. But they're saying they're creating unequal outcomes. And, you know, not due to the dysfunctional nature of corrupt government programs and failing public schools. Oh, it's because of whitey. Because, oh, white people are bad. And so that's why you have failing inner city schools and those kids who don't get jobs and end up in the prison system. And essentially what they're saying is, okay, to level the playing field, we need to punish the people who did better. In other words, so you look at the Harvard affirmative action case.
Yes.
In this case, it wasn't white people being harmed by this. It was Asian Americans. You had lots of examples of people with perfect SATs and great grades. They did not get into Harvard and these Ivy League schools because the Ivy Leagues wanted to have certain racial quotas to meet. And they said, there's too many Asians. We can't accept them. And so they'd dock them on other scores to equalize things for the sake of equity. So that's the problem with DEI. Sounds nice, but it really doesn't mean what you think it means.
Right. And to add to what Tyler's saying, they're also screwing minorities over. So, for example, when I was thinking of going back to school, I called my friend who's an Ivy League grad. And nobody knew I'm Puerto Rican. I don't have an accent anymore. They said they don't know that I grew up in a Latino country. I have both parents are Latino. I speak, read, and write Spanish. And he was like, you know, it's kind of tough for you to get in and all that. And then I go, do they have anything for Latinos? His mouth dropped. You're Latino? I go, yeah. He goes, you're in. He goes, let's say on a scale of 0 to 100, the white person, he says, has a score of 120. He goes, the Latino has a score like a 25 or 30% of that 100 scale, where a black is like 5 or 10%. He goes, you are in. Based on what you've done in life, your scores, you know, I was wanting to think into law school. The LSAT, he says, you got to practice up with the LSAT, yada, yada. He goes, but you're in. I can tell you that now. And that's what, and I always knew this, but all it did was validate my belief. Oh my God. So somebody who scores, say, I'm just using the number, the scale of 100 like he did. If a black or Latino scores like a 15 to 25%, and they get in, and the Asians are already scoring at 120, 130, and the whites have to score that, and the whites aren't even getting in, the Asians aren't getting in, you're setting us up for failure. Because that classroom education, they're not going to slow down for you because you're just a dollar sign at the end anyway. So you're going to not only not pass because you're not prepared, you're going to be thrown out of school with hundreds of thousands in debt. So you get the double whammy. You don't get your education and you're stuck.
And that's not just hypothetical. That's happened in a lot of cases.
No, exactly.
You had people who were accepted and they couldn't cut it. They tried to do some mathematics degree. They didn't know calculus when they went in. And so they drop out, and they have tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in student debt. And now where are they? Are they better off having gotten in?
I guess the equivalent would be with the conservative statement of saying, you know, hey, I'll give you fish while I teach you how to fish so you can learn how to fish on your own. This would be the equivalent of Democrats giving fish to the person, and then the next day, you're working at this company, you got to catch 100 fish for them. Ooh, I don't know how to get it. It's just not going to work. So, yeah, and you are absolutely correct. That's not hypothesis, hypothetical. That's factual. All right. This was going to go into my culture one, but I tossed it in here because it's California related. The judge grants the Menendez brothers a new resentencing hearing. Tyler, were you alive? You weren't even alive when the Menendez trial happened, the murder happened, were you?
No, I wasn't.
So, a Los Angeles judge, well, first of all, so the Menendez brothers horribly murdered. I mean, they've made TV movies as violent, vile, planned out. I wants that money. I wants that money. Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. We fear for our lives. Save us. That is what I said is true. But what came out later was that they were sexually abused by the father and the mother knew it. So that's kind of throwing a big old wrench into the money. Show me the money, show me the money, show the money. And you weren't around then. I remember seeing the headlines. They went on like a spending spree, you know, blowing all that money, living large when they were supposed to be in a mourning. So the sexual abuse was like, really? You're going to fall back on that? But society's different today. So a judge, because a George Soros elected individual, Jorge Gascon, he was looking for a miracle. Said, let me get the public and the TikTokers support on this. I'm going to request a resentencing for the Menendez brothers. That's why he did it. He lost by over 30% points. So, April 2025, a judge decided to grant Eric and Lyle Menendez, I forget which one is he of the toupee in his early 20s, a new resentencing hearing for their 1989 murder conviction has reopened one of California's most infamous cases. So, the new evidence is some kind of a letter allegedly written by Eric Menendez, detailing sexual abuse by their father, Jose Menendez, and prosecutors now argue it could reframe the brother's motive. That's true. It can reframe it. I don't doubt that. The judge cited evolving legal standards on abuse-related defenses since the 1996 trial, which is bullcrap. He was tried then under those laws, and he was justly found guilty. Skeptics question the letter's late emergence.
Now, I'm going to make one point to the contrary of that line of thinking, though. And you might not agree with me on this. But so cannabis was decriminalized in California. There's still a lot of people in the prison system who were sentenced before cannabis decriminalization.
Right.
So if you are still in the prison system because maybe you made a bad choice when you were like 22, you were caught smoking, or you have possessed some amount, and you're still in the penal system, you should be released, I think. So I don't
Correct.
Know if that, I don't know if I agree with that line of argument.
Well, no,
that,
well, your premise is completely wrong, because they were found guilty of the murder of your
yes,
parents.
This is a different case.
What I'm saying is the sexual abuse is that's a part of the case, but they were tried for the murder of their parents. So you're saying, hey, they were put in prison for dealing cannabis. The cannabis laws have changed. Have the murder laws changed now? Is it legal to kill your parents in cold blood? No. See, no. So I understand your premise. I think to help you out, let the old man help you out. What you don't realize is back then, that doesn't happen to boys. That's only girls that can be sexually abused like that. And that was a mentality, and what people don't realize, because I have followed this case, the second trial, they didn't allow a lot of the sexual abuse portion in. So my take isn't that they belong in jail. My take is, put a gun on my head, they deserve a new trial, not to be resentenced and to let out of jail. I'm like, give him a new trial. Because at the end of the day, it was still cold-blooded, premeditated murder, and their actions do not show the actions of somebody who feared for their lives because of sexual abuse. It shows the actions of premeditated, cold-blooded murder. Why? Because they were blowing that money and living large afterwards, showing no remorse. You know. So my take is a new trial. So I understand what your point you're making. I agree with your point. But it's the wrong purpose. I'm sorry. That's just me being anal.
That's all right. That's what you're here for, right?
There you go. Any final takes, brother, on this one? All right. Hot take number 5, Tyler. This one was brought to us by Tyler. Escaped convict linked to Mexican police commander's death. So Cesar Hernandez, he's a convicted murderer. He escaped California's custody this past December. He's now wanted for the April 2025 killing of a Mexican police commander in Tijuana. I have no words for the disgust I have in our democratically led prison system. I just think, to me, there's no excuse for that. Serving 80 years, Tyler, and he escaped. He escaped from a Delano courthouse van on December 2nd after using a homemade key. I mean, this is like the Keystone Cops. Every cop should now, if I'm the family in Mexico, I'm suing every individual cop as well as the Delano courthouse, everybody in there. This is in Kern County, I believe. But that's how I view it. Somebody needs to pay. I mean, an innocent person died because of the incompetence of Keystone cops. And some punishment needs to be meted out to those cops because now they have blood on their hands, not metaphorically, literally. Well, maybe it is metaphorically, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's terrible. Now he's at large. He's armed and dangerous. And this is just the first person who has died as a result of this. And there could be more. That we know of.
And not to mention, if he's willing to kill a cop, he'll shoot you in cold blood. All right. Hot take number six. Sheriff Chad Bianco gains traction in gubernatorial race. Before we move on, are you going to go see him speak tomorrow?
I'll be there, yes.
There you go. I'm still debating to pay $50. Bastards. So, Chad Bianco, he's a big MAGA guy. He's positioning himself as a formidable grassroots candidate. That's my opinion, grassroots. He's got some high-profile endorsements. Matthew Whitaker probably being the biggest big Trump guy in 2020. I think he was the temporary attorney general for a while. The California Republican Assembly, sheriffs in San Bernardino and Orange counties. So he's starting to gain some traction here. I just think, Tyler, honestly, it's too early to tell because we don't really have a candidate set from our side that's well known. But God bless him. He knows what he needs to do to come out firing ahead.
He's got some good things going for him from a Republican standpoint. I mean, his defiance of the COVID mandates. This got him a lot of grassroots support. But we got a couple of people on the field for this gubernatorial race, and we're going to hear them tomorrow. I'm not sure if Bianco is going to make it, but
I think after it's said and done, he probably won't. But it's too early to tell. How many people raised their hand when they said they think Trump could win? Ann Coulter was the only one. But he has some controversy, which is good controversy for our side and good controversy for a lot of Democrat side that now realize mama died, daddy died, my sister died, we took the jab, so he was in defiance of the COVID mandates. So that's a big plus, though the mainstream media is going to try to say it's not. The average Joe goes, the average Joe will not tell you they regret that. Privately, they hate it. Because it's a potential death sentence they force on themselves and their families with their kids. So I'm interested in it. I'll probably end up going. I'm not sure, though, because I am interested in hearing you speak. And, Tyler, I want to go to see if we can get any of these guys on our show. All right. Taxpayer costs for 2028 L.A. Olympic Games raises concerns. We talked about this, but now we're looking at some numbers. The 2028 L.A. Olympics billed as a no public money event. Big lie, are sparking fears that taxpayers will bear significant costs. So they have a $7 billion budget, and they're actually counting on $3 billion in ticket sales and $2 billion in sponsorships to offset that. But urban planners look at Tokyo's $7 billion overrun. Not $7 million, $7 billion overrun. Warning LA's 80 venues, same thing happened there. The 32 Coliseum needed seismic upgrades. These costs are going to balloon. So there's also a $500 million security gap. That's always under budgeted, how much security is needed. And with all this weakness, with how easy, with all the illegals, with the open borders that we have had, there could already be terrorists already in waiting. So I think that $500 million security gap is going to balloon up as well. This is a massive fail happening for LA's Olympic hopes. Thoughts.
Yeah, and I think, well, this is burdening an already burdened state. Well, what is this? Is Los Angeles going to pay for this? What's the state going to chip in? I mean, we already have $1 billion for state services, including California Highway Patrol escorts. And there's already a commitment of $200 million in the federal bus fleet that's already been committed. So there's already a lot of money being spent, but the taxpayers are going to have to make up because there's no way that, they're saying they budgeted this, right? And they're saying they're getting X number of billions in ticket sales and $2 billion in sponsorships. But like you said, the 2020 Tokyo Olympics had a $7 billion overrun. So, okay, you've calculated X number of billions of revenue, and let's say you get 100% of that. Well, then you overrun by a certain number of billion for any city. I mean, that's a crisis right there in certain cities already facing a deficit, in a state facing a deficit. Wait, what? We're just going to, you know, pull some a couple billion out of a hat somewhere? This is going to go on the taxpayers' back.
Right. And the moment you said what the states can chip in, that's the moment you said, well, California's constituents are going to foot the bill. They're going to foot the bill for, oh, my God, it's just, the thought of Karen Bass. I don't know if she'll still be mayor. It's just disgusting. It's disgusting. We don't have a pot to pee in right now, and they want hundreds of... Oh, here's the other thing, reason why it's not looking good. They're going to spend all these billions on that, Tyler. What about the people in all the burned-out area, Palisades and all the others? Money that could be put to better use. Number eight, revisiting the beautiful Elizabeth Holmes. I don't know if she's beautiful. I'm trying to be kind to her. Former CEO of Theranos seeks en banc review in her fraud appeal. So, for those of you not aware, Theranos was a company that said we can prick your finger, do a blood test, and figure out everything wrong with you that can't be done that way before ever. And it was a lie. It was a lie. So, and she was sentenced to jail. She has to pay back hundreds of millions of dollars. The company Theranos was seen as a unicorn. That is a company that's worth billions. Not many companies come out of the gate worth billions. Hers was. She was the hot girl. 40 under 40, on the cover, talking everything. She went down harder than freaking Marvis Frazier to Mike Tyson back in the 80s, and you weren't born then either. So she's escalating her fight to overturn her 2022 fraud conviction. She's demanding an en banc hearing by the Ninth Circuit to challenge a three-judge panel's rejection of her appeal. Before I get your thoughts, you know what an en banc is?
I don't. I'm not a lawyer. Can I give a...
Well, just real quick, an en banc is your case is usually heard by three judges. With the whoever loses the appeal will usually request an en banc, meaning every judge. See, there's more than just three judges on the 9th, 11th, all the various circuits there. So they're requesting all the judges to come out and decide on this. And she's arguing that the Ninth Circuit panel misjudged the trial judge. Made an error in admitting a federal regulator's immediate... They're saying there was errors made, and they're saying the three panel did not get it right. They didn't see it properly, and they allowed people to testify that shouldn't have testified. That's in a nutshell. I'm putting it in general terms. I don't want to get into the technicality of it, but that's why they're seeking it. So the prosecutors are counting that her arguments are just recycling old claims, pointing to 10 investors' losses totaling $700 million. So it was a unicorn company with billions invested and billions lost. So she's just trying to get out of her prison term is what they're saying.
Yeah, it sounds like it, or perhaps get a reduced sentence.
Correct. I guess what people don't realize is she ruined lives. People invested in this company. She stole money. She knew it did not work, and that's the killer. For her, she knew it did not work. All right, here's one. Speaking of Los Angeles, Mayor Bass, Palisades fire response shrouded in secrecy. We talked about this maybe a month and a half ago in terms of her Texas. So Karen Bass's oversight, obviously the devastating January 2025 Palisades fire. She was stuck on a flight from Ghana. It's mired in suspicion because of the near total lack of documented contact. What did the mayor know? You know, Tyler, I got to be honest. It doesn't matter what she knew. They couldn't stop the fire, you know. So this is politics rearing its good head, in my opinion. We can take her out with this, take her out. So it's a vanishing paper trail. So let's see, public records. Okay, they found zero texts or emails between Bass and Harris Dawson, one of her key aficionados, cabinet members, people who she talks to, who keeps her informed. Harris Dawson was running LA in her absence. Very important. So they're saying they cannot find any text between her, but they did find 125 heavily censored texts. So what's that saying? Sometimes this is worse than the actual event, meaning the crime is worse than... There's that saying...
The cover-up is worse than what they actually did, potentially.
And that's what I'm seeing here. And I think this could cost her bad in a recall. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you got to be careful who you're texting, you know. I wish Hegseth and them would have been more careful about texting. I don't know what's with these politicians and not being careful about texting. But, yeah, that's bad. And, you know, these 125 text messages were heavily censored, and this is just fueling rumors of a cover-up. And it's just making Bass look even worse than she already is.
I agree. I hope she burns for this. Oops, wrong choice of words. All right, the final take. Kylie Blitz, number 10. Democrats push gig worker unionization, reviving AB5's labor vision. AB5 was created to destroy the gig worker and to create a scenario where they could eventually unionize. That's all of California's power is in the unions. There's a new bill that came in April to let gig workers unionize, picking up where AB5 left off. It's targeting Uber and Lyft. They're giving you the same union tropes. There's corporate pushback, and there's also a divide amongst the drivers. My take, Tyler, on this is the drivers aren't happy with this. A lot of them do it because they can do it when they can, when they want to. If they get unionized, all of a sudden there's a man, yo, Joe, you're on the road at 5 a.m. I don't want to be, then you're fired. I think this is going to hurt. I don't see this passing because this is for people to make secondary money. When they start unionizing things like that, everything becomes formal. You know, it's kind of like your gig. We're all volunteers here. We do this at a time. We pick. We determine what best suits us, etc. If we were paid employees doing this, if the company said, you're going to do this on Monday at this time, well, no, I don't want to. We like it on Sunday. It's on Monday. Well, no, you're fired. So it takes away that freedom. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's interesting. They're trying to resurrect AB5. It was just such a terrible idea. I mean, a lot of the appeal for many people who work for Uber or Lyft or DoorDash or Uber Eats is the flexibility, like you said. Maybe they have a 9-to-5 job and then they want to work from 5 to 8 on weekdays because they want to have extra income to cover something. If you unionize, that's going to completely change it. This bill and the original AB5, why it was so horrible, it would do away with that. You'd have to essentially structure hours. You'd have to have assigned hours. You'd no longer have the freedom that a regular independent contractor would have to make your own hours and do this and that. So it's kind of interesting you said there's divide among the workers. You know, I can see that because you probably have two camps. You probably have the people who do this full-time. This is their only job. And maybe they're in favor of unionization because maybe they're going to get higher wages, better benefits, whatever it might be. But then you have another large segment, and they do that as supplemental income when they have time on the weekends.
70%.
So you have these two forces, and then there's also the bigger forces there. There's the state progressive union labor establishment that wants this because it's a victory for labor in their eyes. And then you have the companies, Uber or Lyft on the other side, who are going to oppose this once again. So this is a really interesting dynamic. Anything else to add to this?
They're going to kill people because that person at 2 a.m. leaving the bar is going to go, I can't afford an Uber, get in their car. They're going to kill people. Democrats are going to kill people, as they always do, by taking our guns away and allowing women under 21 to get raped, pillaged, murdered because it's illegal for them to carry a gun. They are part of the murder crowd, Democrats are. They always have been. They care more about money, more about power than they do safety. You're going to have a lot of people at 4 a.m., 2 a.m., drunk. I can't afford it. Now, that's the wrong decision on their part, but it's going to create that. They're also going to cost plenty of higher costs. At least, I'm going to say 30-40%. The early numbers are about 20%. I say 30-40% because those numbers are always conservative, especially with California's laws, with the gas prices. You know, every state's gas prices are going down, ours are going up. You know, so Uber Eats, everything's going to suffer. 70% don't want it. Democrats don't care. It's about them, their power, and keeping control. People, wake the bleep up. They want to control you. They want to control every aspect. They're using you as a tool to generate more money via the unions. Any final takes on today's show, Mr. Tyler?
And just one last thing. If they succeed with this, then that's going to raise the price of Ubers. And simple economics tells you that when the price of something goes up, the demand curve, essentially, the new equilibrium is shifted. And there's going to be less overall demand for Uber, the quantity demanded. And so exactly. If there's less rides requested, that means there's less drivers needed. And so what does that mean? Some of the existing drivers are no longer going to be able to drive for Uber.
Exactly, exactly. Uber's going to become for the rich, for those more able to afford it. Yeah, it's going to cost them plenty. That's our show, people. We hope you enjoyed it. Before I let you go, make sure you bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. You will find our other Fired Up show, which is National Issues that I host. You'll find our sports shows. You'll find our other political shows as well. Grumblingsmedia.com. You can find the show as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora under the profile handle Grumblings Media. We hope you've enjoyed this take of California politics. And we hope you'll like and share this podcast. We need you to do that to continue growing. For Tyler Collins and myself, William Del Pilar, this is Fired Up California. And until next week, we bid you adieu.